You know, thinking about Christmas and talking with Will about his memories made me think about a memory from my own Christmas experience. I grew up in Philadelphia, and if you know anything about Philadelphia architecture, one of the things that Philly's known for are row homes, which are really, really small. And so, similar to what you said, Will, I remember every year at Christmas, our small row home would have way too many people in it. And it was just family. Everybody was there. And my mom made lots of things that I love. One of the things she made that's amazing is she made an amazing bread pudding. And again, just, you know, for a guy who's doing keto, bread pudding is a dessert dressed up in carbs. That's what it is. So not necessarily what I'm eating these days, but I remember that just the first taste of that just tasted like Christmas. I'm sure we all have something like that, something that we remember. And one of the things I remember is it wasn't Christmas until at my house there were grown people sitting outside in winter's cold eating food in folding chairs. Because there wasn't enough room in the house, and yet there was room for everybody at the table. Bread is like that. Bread has something to say because bread is an invitation. Bread kind of communicates something, and there's a lot of things about bread that show up in the Christmas story. So here's the thing about bread. Think about, even in ancient cultures, bread is universal. Even today, bread is universal. Anywhere you go, any culture, any class, bread is a part of it. And in ancient times, bread was actually currency. You would pay people in bread. You would barter with bread. Bread also, therefore, was used in sacrifice all the time. So you look and see all kinds of practices of all kinds of worship of gods, and you'll see bread as a through line and a theme throughout it. And I think the reason for that is because bread costs something. You know, it's a labor of love to make bread. You have places where those resources for bread aren't available to everyone, and so bread costs something. And maybe that's why Jesus, in John 6:35, actually says this about himself. He says, "I am the bread of life. And he who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." The big idea today I want you to think about is that Jesus didn't come mainly to give bread. He came to be bread. He came to be bread to a hungry world. And he wasn't talking about physical hunger alone. He's talking about the deeper hungers that all of us have, that all of us can relate to. The hunger for love. The hunger to have some place where you are known and loved. The hunger for belonging, for having a place at the table, for having a family or a friend group where you fit in. That hunger to matter, to live a life of meaning. That's part of the hunger that all of us have. How many of us in this world that we live in are hungry for peace? And that hunger is deep, and it kind of transcends lots of the things that we live in and wrestle through. Or a hunger for purpose. A hunger to say, hey, I'm living a life that feels like it's on track with what I think I was put on this earth to do. And so I want to talk about food because I got to be honest. I'm from a family where every male Mingo that I can trace has died from complications of diabetes. And what I know about that is it's probably less genetic and it's probably more environmental. And I know my own experience with that. I'm not diabetic, but I tell you what, I have had a struggle with food for a really long time. Don't tell anybody else this. I eat my feelings. Literally. I have eaten my feelings. And so I know what it's like to kind of wrestle with that. And you know what? No matter how much I exercise, I've run marathons and half marathons. Now I'm a cyclist. But no matter how much I do those things, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. And so I've had to wrestle with this whole idea of food and what it means in my life. And like I said, I'm doing keto right now. Keto, if you don't know what keto is, basically you can eat all the bacon you want. But if you look at a piece of bread, you gain 2 pounds. That's really what keto, that's really what it is. It's like fasting, but every time somebody else eats bread, it just hits you at a soul level. But, you know, I've used food for coping. I've used food to numb. I've used food for reward. And we're talking about this at Cooking Up Christmas, because don't the holidays push all of those emotional buttons? You're around your family, or maybe you're not around your family. I mean, it pushes all those buttons. And underneath that hunger are the deeper hungers. Like I said, maybe it's the loneliness, and you just don't want to feel lonely this time of year. Maybe there's grief in your life because you lost someone dear to you. and you're going through the holidays for the first time without that person. And that's a really, really hard thing. Maybe there's distress or pressure. Maybe you got to manage multiple households and family commitments and all of that stuff just drives you crazy. Or maybe you just feel like this is a time of year where everybody else is putting an agenda on you and you just want to regain a sense of control. I want you to know that hunger is actually why Jesus came. Mother Teresa knows something about hunger, and one of the things she said is this. She said, being unwanted, unloved, uncared for, forgotten by everybody, that is a much greater hunger than the person who has nothing to eat. And so what if Jesus, in calling himself the bread of life, what if Christmas, having this connection to bread, is really Christmas is God's way of saying, I see your hunger. I know your hunger. And I have come to give you what you need. So we're going to look at a bread story. There's lots of bread stories in the Bible. We're going to look at one bread story that shows up in all of the Gospels. And it's this story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people. So for background, Jesus drew a crowd wherever he went. People were gathering to hear him teach. And he had been teaching all day, and it's getting later in the day, and his 12 closest friends, his disciples, the people he's training up to kind of do what he's doing, they look at each other and they say, Jesus, I don't know if you know this or not, but we do not have a catering plan in place for this experience. So why don't you send these people home? Why don't you let them go where they can get food? Hopefully they can still get food. And Jesus says to his disciples, no, they don't have to leave. You feed them. And they're looking at each other, probably like you'd be looking if somebody told you to feed 5,000 people with nothing. And they're like, what? How are we going to do that? What do you mean? And so then what happens is Jesus asks, well, what do we have? And I don't know who it was. One of the disciples says, hey, we found this guy, found this boy. He's got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And I don't know if that was enough food for him. Maybe he was a heavy eater. Maybe it was enough food for him and a handful of people that he came with. It certainly wasn't enough food for 5,000 people. So what does Jesus do? He performs a miracle. He takes the bread, he blesses it, they begin to distribute it, and it says that 5,000 people were fed. And it says 5,000 men, which means that when you add in women and children, well over 10,000 people were fed with this meal. You and I, if we were there, would call that a miracle. And yet, John, who's the writer who was there and he's recounting this story, doesn't call it a miracle. He actually calls it a sign. A sign. What is a sign? Well, a sign is something that points beyond itself. Give you an example. You know, we travel, my family's going to travel for Christmas, and maybe you travel for Christmas. You might be here visiting family. Well, you know, if you're traveling and you're coming back to Cincinnati, you know, it's like no place like home, right? And when you see the sign on 71 or 75 that says Cincinnati 12 miles, you know what you don't do? You don't pull your family over, break out a picnic blanket, and say, we're home. We're home. Look at the sign. No, you look at the sign because the sign is pointing beyond itself to home, to where you're ultimately trying to get to. One theologian guy says it this way. He says, a sign matters not just for what it is, but for what it shows us about the one who does it. I believe Jesus fed the 5,000 not primarily because he wanted to feed them bread, but that he did that sign because he was trying to point to something beyond that miracle. I think Jesus was saying, if I can give you physical bread to feed your body, how much more can me as the bread of life fill your life? It was a sign. And in fact, we sung the song, you heard the song, A Little Town of Bethlehem, because the city of Bethlehem was also a sign. And it's in the Christmas story for a particular reason. God is very creative. And so hundreds of years before Jesus ever was born, there was a prophet, Micah, and he was prophesying about this rescuer who would come. And look at what he says in Micah 5:2 about Bethlehem. He says, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from of old, from everlasting. Therefore he shall give them up until that time that she who is in labor has given birth. Sound like the Christmas story? You see those Christmas themes in there? Then the remnant of his brethren shall return to the children of Israel. And then he says this, and he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall abide. For now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, And it says, and this one shall bring peace. Did you know that Bethlehem means house of bread? The city's name means house of bread, another sign, another breadcrumb, that literally the bread of life with bread for the world would be born in the city called the house of bread. I've had a chance to go to Bethlehem in Israel, and I'm going to tell you two stories. One story is probably one of my favorite experiences that I've ever had anywhere, especially in Israel. You know, when you go to these different places in Israel, I'm not talking about that one yet. That's my second story. That's my second Bethlehem story. So they're getting excited back there. I love it. I love it. You're tracking with me. This story happened at a chapel. You know, when you go to Israel, how many people have been to Israel? Anybody been to Israel here? Okay, a couple people. It's basically you just visiting churches. Like a lot of the experiences. And here's a church that they built where this thing happened. And here's a church they built where this thing happened. Well, one of the places in Bethlehem that they have a chapel, it's not a church, but a chapel, is called the Shepherd's Fields Chapel. And it's the chapel that commemorates the place where the angels came to the shepherds to tell them about the bread of life that was born for the world. And in these churches all have great acoustics. And so oftentimes you'll hear groups of people singing songs in these churches, you know, singing religious songs in these churches. Well, as you might imagine, when people go to the Shepherd's Fields Chapel in Bethlehem, they sing Christmas songs, no matter what time of year it is. And so, and the way it works is like, you know, there's usually a pastor who's leading a group, and they go in with their group, and you kind of wait outside until they're done. It's a small chapel, and then you get to lead your group. Well, I was a pastor. I was leading a group. And so, but this time, they actually let us go in with this other group, a little bit of a smaller group, and they were being led by a priest who was speaking a language that I didn't understand. But they're together and they're in the chapel and he's giving kind of a little bit of a reflection to the people that he had led into that experience. And then all of a sudden, we hear them begin to sing, "Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him." Although they're singing it in their language. But he knew that we would know the tune. And so he gestures to me to say to our group, "Why don't you join us?" And so there we were in the shepherd's field, where the bread of life was pronounced to the shepherds. And even though we speak a different language, we were all there singing the same song. And it's such a beautiful reminder that this bread of life really did come for the whole world. That the only reason that there's a group from Cincinnati, Ohio, and a group from this country gathered in a place in the Middle East is because we believe that Jesus was the bread of life. God pulled out all the stops to make sure that the world would know that Jesus was his promised rescuer, that he was his promised son. Peter Stoner is a mathematician, and he did a calculation on the probability. See, there's all these prophecies. Micah's just one of them, but there's all these prophecies that show up in the Old Testament portion of the Bible, the first 39 books, and they all have these references to a rescuer who would come, these prophecies. And so Peter Stoner said, what's the probability that one person could fulfill just 8 of these magnificent prophecies? And he calculated that probability, again, that one person could just fulfill 8 of these prophecies to be 1 in 100 trillion. Now, I am not a mathematician, but that is a big number. 1 in 100 trillion. Let me put it in terms that maybe makes it more sense to us. This would be more unlikely than winning the Mega Millions lottery, getting struck by lightning, and being attacked by a shark all on the same day. That's how unlikely this is. And yet, Jesus didn't just fulfill 8 of these, he fulfilled dozens of these, including being born in Bethlehem, the house of bread. Why? Because God, I believe, wanted us to know you can receive this bread. You can trust this bread. You can trust that this is, in fact, my son. And that this story really matters. And so what do we do with that? I think this bread thing kind of moves us into what is the real work of Christmas? What's Christmas about for us? What are we supposed to make of the Christmas story? You know, going back to the bread story, Jesus feeds 5,000 plus probably men and women, 10,000 people. And so the next day, surprise, surprise, the crowd is back. Because wouldn't you be back? There is a bread-making machine. I would come back, right? So the crowd the next day comes back, and they understand how this works. They're like, okay, Jesus, tell us, what do we need to do? Like, here's what we want. we want your bread. We know you want something from us. Tell us what we need to do. We'll make an arrangement. You'll keep giving us bread and we'll just keep hitting the marks. But Jesus kind of throws them off when he says this to them. He says, do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you because God the Father has set his seal on him. This is the same section where Jesus calls himself the bread of life. He actually calls himself that multiple times. Jesus is saying, you think it's about the actual physical bread, but there is a greater bread. There's a more satisfying bread, and that's the bread that you should be working toward. He flips it on them when they say, well, what's the way this works? And he says this in John 6:29, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent. You know, part of us really wants to have a checklist when it comes to God. We really do. We just want to say, God, tell me what I need to do. I'll do the good things, and you'll give me a good life. And there's two reasons that doesn't work. One is, actually, if God worked that way, that's not a relationship. And God wants a relationship with you and I. But that's not a relationship. That's a transactional thing. That's an ATM. That's not a relationship. But the other reason, and I'm actually glad for this, that it doesn't work that way, is because guess what? No matter what the checklist would be, we can't achieve it. We will fall short. We will fail. So I am glad that my performance isn't the primary factor on whether God is kind to me or not, because I fail all the time. You might sit up here and you might say, well, you seem like a decent guy. You're a pastor. Like, you're probably really kind. If we were to see you in culture and public, you'd probably be a really nice guy. And all I would say to you is, you've obviously never seen me on the sideline of one of my kids' soccer games. You just haven't seen it. So, you know, this year, just a couple weeks ago, my son's soccer team was in the regional tournament, and I'm there, and the fans are there, and apparently I have really strong opinions about the offsides penalty when it comes to soccer. Now, are there any soccer refs in here? Because if so, I just want you to know you have a special place in heaven. I know that God loves you specially, because you got to deal with parents like me. And so sure enough, the refs call offsides. I disagreed with the call, and let's just say I got a little, a little energetic. I got a little energetic, and I'm actually yelling in the field like I'm the coach of Manchester United. Like, I'm an MLS coach. Like, I know better than the rest. I'm like to hear, and I'm yelling, I'm screaming. And then it happened. I wish I could tell you this is the first time this happened for me. It wasn't. No, this has happened multiple times in my experience as a sideline parent. I got the look from my son, who was playing on the field far away, but clearly not so far away that he couldn't hear his dad screaming at the refs. And my son gave me that look. Any parents ever get this look where your son's looking at you? You know what they're saying. They're like, you are embarrassing. Would you just go home? Like, you're embarrassing me so badly right now. He was embarrassed. And then, as if that wasn't enough, then I looked to my left and I saw my dear wife, Maria. And she was giving me her look. That's a whole other look, by the way. That's a whole other look. And that look was like, who are you right now? And why are you yelling at teenagers? You know, I was thinking about it, and I'm a pastor. So I said, you know what? I think it's because I have the spiritual gift of officiating critique. I think that's what I have right now, which didn't fly. And so, you know, but I think about those moments in my life where I'm like, oh my gosh, I just screwed that up royally. And that happens all the time for me. And so I don't know about you, but I am so glad that the way this whole bread thing works isn't, Chuck, you got to be perfect. Chuck, you got to hit every checklist. And then you get God's goodness. Then you get God's bread. I am so glad that it doesn't work that way. That actually, instead, Jesus came to say, in your imperfections, in the place where you have hunger, in the places where you fall short, I want to be bread for you. Put to you this way. Jesus is saying, you don't have to bake the bread. You don't have to earn the bread. You just get to receive the bread. And Christmas is Jesus coming into the world with bread to feed our deepest hungers. So then, how do we do the work of believing? If that's the work, how do we do it? Well, there is a second church. It's my second Bethlehem story. And the second church is the Church of the Nativity. And that's the church that commemorates Mary and Joseph and Jesus and kind of the moment that we think about when we think about Christmas, right? Find the baby wrapped in swaddling cloths lying in a manger. That scene, that moment, is commemorated by the Church of the Nativity. Now, the Church of the Nativity is a large church. It's a beautiful church. It's got different levels to it. I mean, it's unbelievable. But it has two entrances. One of the entrances is actually what you would think of, a grand entrance of a church. But then it has this entrance as well. This door is called the door of humility. And basically, this door is about 4 feet high, so there is no way to get into this church through this door without getting low and kind of humbling yourself as you come into the church. Well, here's a picture of me going through the door of humility. Now, what you should know is I went to this trip, happened a couple weeks after I had a really bad motorcycle accident. And so I had to do the whole trip to Israel in a boot. Which, let's just be clear, if the goal was humility, the boot really helped me. Because it was not easy to crawl and get low and get through that door. But I remember our guide pointing something out to all of us as we were going through the door of humility. He said, you know, the thing I love about this church is that you'll see people like me there from all walks of life, from all languages, from all classes, from all income levels, you name it, all political persuasions, all of them, but they all enter this church the same way. Because all of us, if we are going to receive the bread of life, enter the same way. Now, I told you earlier about me and food, and one of the things that's been helpful to me is a quote that I read from a woman who kind of helps people process their relationship with food. And she said this. She said, basically, you need to interview your hunger. Interview your hunger and ask yourself, what am I really hungry for? And so I want to ask you that question. Jesus came to be bread. He came to be the bread of life. I wonder, what are you really hungry for? Are you hungry for love? And as you think about the holidays, maybe some of us in here thought we'd be married by now, or we were married, and for some reason that is not our place and state right now. I wonder if that's the deeper hunger that you're feeling in this moment, in this time of year. Maybe for others of us, it's our children, and we got some estrangement from some of the kids in our house. People that we thought would always be around our Christmas table are not going to be around our Christmas table this year, and we're really wrestling with that. I wonder if that's the thing that you're deeply hungry for. I wonder if for some of us, it's the hunger for belonging. It's the hunger to say, where is my table? Maybe you're in a new environment. You could be in a new neighborhood. You could be in a new city. You might be new to Cincinnati area. And you're like, man, what's the table where I'm going to feel like I belong? You want that. Maybe you're a student in here and you've transitioned. You know, you're a couple months in to college, but you're still trying to find your people. Maybe that's the place that you're really hungry for. Like, what's my belonging going to look like? Where am I going to find my friends? Maybe for others of us, it's a hunger for peace. Because 2025 has been a really hard year. And as you think about where you are right now, you're really wrestling with God. I don't know if I can take much more of what I've had to endure this year. I need some peace in my life. And so you're asking that question today. Where are you going to find peace? Maybe you're taking a deep breath and there's a part of you that's excited that the year is ending, but in the same vein, there's a part of you that's holding your breath because if 2026 has more of what 2025 had, you just don't know how you're going to make it. In fact, maybe for some of us, the thing we're most hungry for is a fresh start. How do I make a fresh start in my life? Maybe this was a year where something broke. Maybe this was a year where you had to confront something that's been a part of your life for a really long time. And you've known, I've got to find a way to heal. I've got to find a way to change, but you've not been able to do that. And so you're just sitting here and you're like, God, I just want a fresh start. I don't know what it is for you, but I wonder, what is it that you're most hungry for? See, I believe that Christmas and this bread of life has two invitations for you. And I think the first invitation is exactly what we just had on the screen. Interview your hunger. This week, I want to encourage you to interview the hunger that you have, to really spend some time with yourself. You may not be a prayer, or if you are a prayer, you can pray around this. Hey, what would it look like for me to just get clear on what is it that I'm really hungry for this year? I wonder if you took the time to do that this week, if there might not be a moment of revelation, a moment of clarity that really is powerful for you. Interview your hunger. And the second thing is, open your hands and receive. This bread, again, is not bread you have to make. The work, Jesus says, is simply the work of believing. And so maybe this week, opening your hands and receive looks like you having an honest conversation with God. Again, you may be a prayer, you may not be a prayer. You can just pray a simple prayer like, God, if you're real, then would you help this hunger that I feel? And here's what I believe. I believe God loves that prayer. I believe he responds to that prayer. I believe he will respond to that prayer. And maybe that's what it looks like. Maybe for you, opening up your hands and receive is like, hey, somebody invited you here today. And there may be a couple steps down the path on this whole God-following thing. Maybe it's like, you know what, this church, this is a place where maybe I can ask some of my questions. Man, there are people who can engage you. You can go to the hearth room right after this if you want to have questions answered or kind of say, hey, how can I get connected? I don't know what it is for you. But man, what I know is this. All you have to do is open your hands and receive it. It's there for you. Jesus is there for you. The bread of life is there for you. He just wants you to open your hands and receive it. Not because you understand everything, and certainly not because you don't have any more questions, but because you know you need what he came to offer. See, Jesus didn't come primarily to give bread. He came to be bread. So I've got one more invitation for you, and it's the invitation to Christmas Eve. You do things big here at Horizon, and so there's going to be 10 Christmas Eve services happening on the 23rd and the 24th. That is amazing, and it's a great opportunity both to come and connect to the fullness of this story in an incredibly creative way like you'll never see anywhere else, and it's also a great opportunity to invite someone in your life, maybe someone who you know is a little bit hungry for something and they may not know what it is. This may be a great opportunity. So tomorrow, the tickets go on sale. These are complimentary tickets, but they go online. And so we want you to jump online, get a ticket at a time that works for you, maybe at a time that works for a friend, so that you can be a part of the Christmas Eve experience here at Horizon. And I just have one final word for you, and I pray it's a word of blessing to you, and it's this. I pray that this Christmas, that you would be fed in the places you feel most empty, and that you would find peace where you need it most. Merry Christmas, and thank you all for coming. We'll see you next week.